This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto, Bahamian urologist, and I'm joined here with my co-host, Dr. Wesley Francis, Bahamian general surgeon and surgical oncologist. So we have a fascinating show today. We're going to do a little bit of a part two and a refresher and rehashing of all the information I relayed last week, which was a fascinating show, in which I brought up the U.S. Surgeon General's stance that in terms of alcohol and it being a modifiable risk factor for all cancers, that he wanted to implement putting actual warning labels on all alcoholic beverages sold in the United States. To anyone purchasing any alcohol beverage, that it increases your risk of cancer. The same sort of warning that's present on all cigarette cartons for decades. So that is shocking, particularly we're a country that consumes a lot of alcohol. So we want to talk about modifier risk factors. We want to talk about cancer risk in general, the different main cancers, prostate cancer, colon cancer, breast cancer. And it's an honor to have not just a national expert, regional and internationally recognized Dr. Wesley Francis. So what is your opinion, Dr. Francis, on alcohol? We know alcohol is a carcinogen. We know alcohol is a neurotoxin. Layman's term, it is a poison. What do you think of its link in terms of, in particular, breast cancer?
So, good evening, Bahamas, and thank you again, Greg, for inviting me and to be a part of the show. I know I missed last week. I was operating, and I'm always happy to be here to allow us an opportunity to educate. And I think that's what the show is all about, to educate and increase awareness. I think, first of all, the U.S. Surgeon General advisory really was an important document and an important event, which was to increase or make us aware of the link between alcohol and cancer in general. It's something that we've always known, but this is the first time that it's been published that it's the third leading preventable cause of death. And when we say preventable cause of death, I mean you can't really change it. You can't prevent why if you have a genetic, if you're born with a genetic mutation that predisposes you to developing cancer, that you can't really change, all right? Because that's your genetic. You were born with that. But certainly when you talk about preventable cause of death, and when they said it was the third leading cause behind tobacco, obesity, and then alcohol, notice that tobacco, modifiable, obesity, modifiable, and now alcohol. And that's very significant because alcohol is consumed so much, as you said last week. And so this is a stark awareness now to everybody, to the layperson, to the practitioners, because, you know, we always tell people anything in moderation is good. But now, even with low doses or low consumption or small consumptions of alcohol, the research now recognizes that it actually increases your risk of developing cancer. And breast cancer, for that matter. I mean, we knew that there was a relationship. But now, with the Surgeon General saying that 16.4% of breast cancer cases are attributable directly to alcohol, That's a very significant statistics.
So that's essentially saying 1 in 6 cases of breast cancer are related to alcohol consumption. Which, if you can look at it in a positive way, we are overwhelmed with breast cancer cases. We feel helpless, and even as physicians, as surgeons, in the number of cancer cases we're seeing. But if we can see that there are modifiable risk factors, where studies have shown convincingly that as many as 40% of cancers are modifiable risk factors that we can change, as many as 50%, half of cancer deaths are related to modifiable risk factors that we can change. We can change the whole paradigm. We can change our nation from being such high incidence of colon cancer. We're having 100 prostate cancer deaths a year. Yeah. We're having young and older women dying needlessly of breast cancer. We have a call early on. Good evening. Oh, this is Urologist Speaks.
I think we lost the caller.
Yeah, I think we lost the call. Okay, So, I mean, that's striking, but I think we look at it in a positive way. We don't have to be relying on alcohol.
The thing is to understand the awareness. We need to now be more aware. I think alcohol has become a part of social activity. People drink socially wherever you go. I mean, and I think that now everyone needs to consider that and be more aware. With tobacco smoking and cancer, you know, their labeled warnings. And now the U.S. Surgeon General is actually calling for label warnings for alcohol. And so that becomes an important thing for everybody to note.
Yeah, we talk about nicotine, we talk about cigarette smoking as well. A lot of men in this country don't want to hear about it. There are a lot of people who socially smoke cigars, whether it's on the golf courses or in the bars or playing dominoes after work. And they don't want to hear. And even as a urologist, I see so many cases of men in their prime, families they're supporting, huge contributors to our society, who are struck with bladder cancer and aggressive form of that. And it's almost certainly related to, all right, I'm smoking five times a week in terms of a cigar. Oh, I won't touch cigarettes, but they somehow believe that cigars are safe, or even vaping. And many studies show vaping is even more dangerous than filtered cigarettes. Yeah. So we need to get away from our reliance on nicotine completely. We all know someone who's had cancer. We are here volunteering, trying to improve the quality of life of our fellow Bahamians and residents. We're trying to improve the longevity, the quality of life physically, emotionally, spiritually. And there are things that can be done. Everything is doom and gloom.
We're always here just to educate, and we want to bring attention to this trifecta, I call it now. Right? It's the trifecta. That's tobacco, obesity, and alcohol.
Okay, we have a call again. Let's see if this works. This urologist speaks.
Good evening, Dr. Pinto. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And good evening to your guests in studio. You know, it is so interesting that you would talk about the effects of smoking in particular in our society. In an industry where I used to work, that, i.e. the hotel casino industry, you know, we hear a lot of things about persons who personally smoke. But the impacts of secondhand smoke by a lot of persons working in these industries, and yet there seems to be, I don't think any legislation has been passed whereas the ban smoking in closed environments. Whereas it subjects those who do not smoke, their employment is in these environments, it exposes them to potential cancer. There's also, to the best of my knowledge, no legislation or nothing in consideration from the insurance companies by companies to ensure that these persons who work in these areas are protected by some sort of insurance. And, you know, I would just like to hear more from the medical standpoint, from your purview, saying that obviously, as you stated, you have been exposed to many, especially many men in their prime, but many women also in their prime who would have been subjected to secondhand smoking, the impact that, or the negative impacts that it has had on their health, on their reproduction systems, so on and so forth. We would like to hear a little more in depth, really getting down to the raw basics of exactly how impactful negatively this smoking and the exposure to those who smoke. How impactful is it on our society today, especially from a health perspective? Thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Oh, a wonderful questions, and you alerted us to very important issues. It's not as big a problem as I would say in many countries. I've been in certain countries, been in Germany, I've been in France working, I've been in South Africa, where essentially you're more likely to smoke than not smoke. We, for example, when I was in South Africa, we would have entire wards in our urology department just dedicated to bladder cancer patients because we had so many bladder cancer cases because everybody was smoking. And there was a strong association with bladder cancer and smoking. We would have operating lists every single week, which was dedicated, was called a bladder cancer operative list, just for bladder cancers. And then we would talk about the link to kidney cancers, and even increasing the risk of prostate cancer. But for most people, they only think about lung cancer. There's increases the risk of basically every single cancer, not to talk about the increased risk of cardiovascular disease, increased heart attack. Secondhand smoke can have a profoundly negative impact on your life, particularly if you're exposed routinely, if you're working in a bar, if you're working in a casino, if you have a spouse who does that and they keep coming home. That smoke permeates into your skin. It permeates into your hair follicles. It permeates into your clothes. You may smoke and then you go out to smoke and you think you're fine because you're in the open air, and then you go back into your house and you're holding your baby who's developing the vital organs, and you don't know what profound effect or DNA alterations or mutations you're creating by exposing your young one to smoking. So there's no way that we can ever support smoking. I mean, there's every negative impact that you can think of in terms of smoking. I'll hand it over to Dr. Francis.
No, I mean, you know, the caller is right. We're talking about alcohol, and the Surgeon General said that alcohol was the third leading preventable cause of death, but tobacco smoke is the first leading cause of death. I must say that if you look at our registry, lung cancer is not as high as it is with more industrialized countries or first world countries. And, you know, we always said Bahamians and Bas never used to smoke as much. So that's why we saw less lung cancer. But I think it's on the rise, especially in more younger people. And so it is becoming a problem for people who smoke and also for those who have to enjoy secondhand smoke. And I agree with the caller that, we have to have some advocacy groups to nudge the legislators to look at how we can have more safety in the workplace. I think that there might be some rules. I'm not 100% sure, but I'd have to actually look that up. But, I mean, to protect people from smoking in a closed environment in the Bahamas, but certainly that is something that needs to happen. And because it's undeniable. I mean, everybody knows the ill effects of tobacco smoke. And people who continue to smoke, they choose to smoke already knowing these ill effects. So we're not saying anything new. I think the people who smoke, they understand that this is a risk. But they derive benefits from smoking, and therefore they continue to do so because it's a behavioral thing. It's just unfortunate. I think we have another call.
Yes, good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Good evening, doctor. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
Good, man. Good show. I've been trying to get through to the show from last week, but anyway, I have I don't know if it's a problem, but I urinate a lot in the night.
There are many reasons for it. It goes hand in hand with aging, but we have to look at you basically as a urologist. You've got to be an investigator in any. Anytime anyone has any complaints or symptoms. But the first thing, we'll look at your age. If you're middle-aged or older, more than likely you have somewhat of an obstructive prostate. Statistically speaking, you're more likely to have a benign enlargement of your prostate, which is called BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia. We look at it in terms of incidence in decades, where about 50% of 50-year-olds, 60% of 60-year-olds, and more than 70% of 70-year-olds are going to have somewhat of an obstructive prostate that's going to have what we call irritative and obstructive lower urinary tract symptoms. So you go to urinate, you're not emptying completely. You know that because 15, 20 minutes later, again, you may have a little hesitancy in terms of initiation of the stream, or the opposite. You have urinary urge incontinence, where when you got to pee, you open that front door, you don't even make it to the toilet. And that could be devastating and embarrassing and socially awkward. But you need 7 hours of good sleep just for your cardiovascular health. It can cause marital problems if you're waking up five times in the night to urinate and you're waking up your spouse. It can disrupt your sleep in terms of you don't even have concentration throughout the day. You're fatigued throughout the day. So we have to figure out, is it your own doing? Is it that you're on certain medications? Are you on diuretics that you may not necessarily need to be on? What is your consumption of liquids? I have so many patients who say, why am I waking up five times in the night? It might be because you're having eight beers before you go to bed. It might be because you're having two cups of Lipton tea full of caffeine or coffee, and you want to know why you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and can't go back to sleep, or you're peeing all night because of the diuretics. Then you also have to look at, some people even believe that they wake up to pee once, they have to have another glass of water to replace what they just voided, which is ridiculous. So more than likely, it's related to an enlarged prostate. We can give you medications as first-line therapy that can give you back your control of your life and your happiness in terms of not waking up in the night to urinate. But even as we get older, men and women, they're going to have, there's a hormone that's produced by the kidneys. It's called vasopressin. It's going to be in less and less supply. That suppresses the amount of urine that we're going to make throughout the night, so we can get a good night's sleep. So we're making more urine during the day than we do in the night. As we get older, there's less and less vasopressin, and we're just making as much urine during the night, just during the day, or even self can contribute to you peeing and urinating frequently. So we can also give you a synthetic analog of vasopressin called desmopressin. We can give you an alpha blocker or 5-alpha reductase class of drugs to allow you to empty your bladder more completely. So there are many reasons for it, but the most important thing is you realize it's a problem. You shouldn't be waking up more than twice in the night to urinate, and seek help, because we can turn your life around.
Yeah, certainly that, needs to get help with that.
Five, yeah. Six, seven times.
No, that's excessive, and I'm sure you're not emptying your bladder. And it's not just a nuisance. Some people tolerate it where they'll have a bucket or a jug at the side of the bed because they can't even bother to wake up, or they don't have the strength to wake up to go and walk to the toilet.
That's what it is.
But you don't know, if you're not emptying your bladder, you have back pressure on your bladder. The bladder can only take so many knocks. You're going to get back pressure on your kidneys, where you're going to develop what we call medically hydronephrosis. You're going to develop acute kidney injury. Eventually, it can lead to chronic renal failure. I know dozens of men in this country on dialysis. They don't want to see a doctor. They don't want to take a medication. But 3 days a week, they have to wake up 4 o'clock in the morning to get hemodialysis, praying to God to get a kidney transplant, because they didn't listen to the fact they weren't emptying their bladder.
Yeah, and there's also while I'm urinating, my heart would kind of speed up. And then the minute I finish, it just goes right back down to normal.
You know that there's something wrong, and you can seek help, and it sounds like it's very treatable. A lot of people, if they want to know they're emptying their bladder, men, they'll want to know that they go to pass stool, not even particularly constipated, but they increase their intra-abdominal pressure to pass stool, and they just automatically pass urine. That's because their bladder is always full of urine at least half the time. Men shouldn't be getting urinary tract infections. If you keep getting urinary tract infections, almost certainly you're not emptying your bladder. So There is a problem. It's a common problem as you get older.
Yeah.
Please don't let it get any worse.
Yeah,
please don't wait till you wake in ten times a night to pee, or you can't pee at all, and we got to put you on a catheter.
But I pee a lot.
Yeah, you got to get that checked out, caller.
A lot of pee. But, okay, Doc, I need to come and see you.
Well, me or any urologist, I'm not here to promote myself, but I want you to get help.
Okay, sir.
All right. Thank you for your questions and your call in. So I think, Dr. Francis, what we got to say, cancer is itself a disease, but you have to look at it. It's a category of diseases. There are so many different types of cancer. For example, prostate cancer, your chance of survival of its organ-confined early disease is nearly 100%. No one should be dying of prostate cancer. It's very easily detected. We have so many things in our armament to pick up prostate cancer early, even when it's so early that it's clinically insignificant, that we can actively surveil someone many times for 8, 10, 12 years before we need to cure you. Colon cancer, no one should be dying of colon cancer. If you get your routine colonoscopies, you can pick up and prevent colon cancer
It's totally preventable.
But when we look at breast cancer is a much more complicated disease. It's a much more complex disease. For example, for breast cancer itself, if you have ER, PR positive or HER2 new positive, it's a totally different disease than triple negative breast cancer.
I always tell patients is not a one size fits all, but what I like to emphasize is certainly on a platform like this is that breast cancer is not preventable, but early detection is what saves people's lives. If you catch breast cancer early through screening, and by screening we do mammography, that's the screening tool of choice, then we tend to have very good outcomes. So screen-detected breast cancer tend to have 90-95% survival rates even at 10 years. So the problem is when we get breast cancer at a later stage, it becomes much more challenging. The good thing, though, is that there's been so much study done on breast cancer. I mean, so much research that we now know that there's several different subtypes of breast cancer, and each subtype behaves differently, and each one is treated differently. One time ago, we could say, surgery was the first option for most people. But nowadays, surgery is not the first option for most people. And so we have all these different subtypes of breast cancer. And as you mentioned, ERP, and what that is, that's the expression of the cancer itself. And this expression, whether it's related to hormones, whether it's express a certain target on the cell that can be manipulated. And so we look at hormone-responsive breast cancers, and then those are not hormone-responsive, or the triple-negative breast cancers. And then there's the HER2, which it allows the cells to be susceptible to a certain chemotherapy drug. And the evolution of therapy has kind of revolutionized the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer. People don't need to be dying of breast cancer anymore. Certainly, first of all, screening and identifying breast cancer early, and now also the treatment options have evolved. And they've evolved to the point where nowadays, only a select group of breast cancer patients are offered surgery first. Triple negative breast cancer, about 10 years ago, we used to, operate on these people. But now, it's chemotherapy up front and immunotherapy up front. And what happens is that the cancer literally disappears. And when that cancer disappears, they still would need surgery, however. But the overall survival, it's that much better. And so I want to educate women that you have to understand that breast cancer is not one disease. And it's important to know that your treating physicians have to educate you and let you know what type of breast cancer it is and what is the specific treatment for that. And so, again, everyone needs to be aware and be educated. And on the next side of the break, we'll talk more about the treatment. options.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. Your name is a call.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks. We're talking about our nation and cancer risk and modifiable risk factors. We're talking about breast cancer. Before we went off on the break, we're here with Dr. Wesley Francis, surgical oncologist and breast cancer expert. We talk about obesity and breast cancer risk. So the bottom line, obesity, I discussed that a few weeks ago, is a disease in itself. I don't think we understand. It is a disease that we must overcome and treat it as such. It's associated with as much as 30 to 40% recurrence rate with breast cancer and death. And we look at postmenopausal in particular. Studies have shown that if you put on as little as 11 pounds after being in menopause, you can increase your risk of getting breast cancer by as much as 11%. So that's why we always advocate, don't be sedentary, whether you're young, middle-aged, or old. Please get active. Please watch your diet. Reduce your processed food intake. Make sure that you have a high-fiber diet. Make sure that you have fruit and vegetables, etc. So what is really the link between breast cancer and obesity? I mean, you look at several factors are known to stimulate the growth of breast cancer, including steroid hormones like estrogens, for receptor-positive breast cancers in particular. And we look at obese fat cells. So as fat cells become larger, as women become obese, then the factors can change and drive the growth of breast cancer itself. So on a molecular level, when these fat cells die as a consequence of being dysfunctional, they can recruit immune cells so that they can produce inflammatory mediators that can contribute to the growth of cancer cells. So what do you have to say for women out there who have two sisters who have breast cancer, who have a grandmother who had breast cancer, who have a mother who may have unfortunately died of breast cancer in their teenage years, and they're living a morbid existence thinking that inevitably they cannot avoid getting breast cancer and their whole life is doom and gloom with no future whatsoever?
Well, I'll say that there's always hope. Right. And one of the things we've been talking about, modifiable risk factors. We talk about, in particular, obesity and alcohol intake, all that have already been recognized as an increasing risk of breast cancer. But, you know, there's the genetic component. And whenever you see your grandmother, mother, and daughter, or three generations, and multiple siblings with breast cancer, you have to think about that there's a genetic component to that. And there are ways of treating people who have predisposition and to improve their life and give them hope. The thing about it is that we have to first educate and we have to first recognize that, listen, you may be in a high-risk family. And once you understand that you're in a high-risk family and you and your practitioner discuss that, then your screening can be individualized. And that's what becomes important. So high-risk patients are screened in a different way. And so the screening starts early. The screening is start. We use a different screening tool. It's not just a mammogram, but you have to add an MRI to it. And also, there's medication that can decrease your risk. In fact, tamoxifen is one of the medications that can reduce your risk of breast cancer for those in the high-risk group. So there's hope. There's also the discussion of prophylactic mastectomy, which means basically the only way that you can prevent breast cancer is to remove your breast. Now, that for a young woman, that may be a difficult conversation to have.
But we'll also talk about immediate reconstruction.
Right. So we do have, you don't just say prophylactic mastectomy without having a conversation about immediate reconstruction. Because, I mean, the breast is certainly a sexual organ, and women have, you know, feel a sense of identity with their breasts, and it's important. And so in the Bahamas, I mean, we have a lot of plastic surgeons who offer immediate reconstruction after a mastectomy. So prophylactic mastectomy on the one end, that's the surgical side of it. Then there's the increased screening with the use of MRI. Now, I mean, got to be honest, MRI is not that is a little more expensive, but certainly it can get incorporated in screening for those patients who are high population. And I always tell women that you have to be established high risk for you to start using MRI as a screening tool. And then thirdly, to consider medication to reduce your risk. But I think, once you're armed with information and you are aware, awareness is a huge thing. If you are aware and then you act on that awareness, you take the necessary precautions that are outlined, and it's individualized between you and your practitioner.
So I'll just speak a little bit on that. What is the role that genes play, not just breast cancer, but all cancer? So it's like a genes 101. We need to first differentiate, and we talk about inherited genes and mutations. They're two different types. We got to differentiate. There's germline mutations, and then there's, when we talk about germline mutations, those are inherited from our parents, from our mother, or from our father. So any mutation in the germline genes are inherited from our parents, such as BRCA gene mutation type 1, type 2, which will increase our risk of not just breast cancer. And we also want to say that men can get breast cancer.
Yes.
If you have a mass, if you have a lump in your breast as a male, don't ignore it, please. Vast majority, 90% of breast cancers, I don't know that, about that, are on women, but please don't let be that 10%.
And we see it. I mean, the registry is clear. We see male breast cancer. Every year I see at least three male breast cancers. And if you look at the registry data, I mean, it's small, but at least about 4 to 5 males end up with breast cancer. And that's an indication that that's a high-risk family. If a male in your family has breast cancer, all the women should be concerned, because the majority, 90% of males who do get breast cancer have or are carriers of the BRCA gene. And so that's important to know.
Yes, so when we're talking about the question of inheritance, germline mutations, how many cancers are related to germline mutations? When we look in studies, not that many. Maybe about 5% are related. It more prevalent, it's actually the somatic acquired mutations that about 95% of cancers arise from that. So when people feel doom and gloom that, yes, you have an increased risk, but you have to look at the acquired and somatic mutations, which can be influenced by modifiable risk factors that we have our control over. It's our diet, or it's our exercise or lack thereof. It's our decision to smoke or not to smoke, or be in the presence of those who smoke. But when we talk about somatic or mutations or acquired mutations, the next question is, what is mutations? And the first thing we spoke about is cigarette and cigar smoking. The next one is obesity. There's a lot of debate, even among physicians and the fraternity itself. How do we define obesity? We use body mass index, which is highly unreliable. So obesity is the second most important or significant environmental modifiable risk factor for developing cancer. So if you want to get rid of that excess weight, that in itself should be a motivation to take control of your life and can take control of your weight. But it's not just obesity per se. It's not just because you have an extra love handle that you'll say, all right, you're an increased risk of developing cancer, whether it's colon cancer or prostate cancer, breast cancer, etc. It's actually related to the obesity itself. It's in terms of insulin resistance or the inflammation associated with obesity. It's not obesity itself. We put it under the umbrella of obesity, but what's the effect of, what is the physiology behind being obese? When you look at it, you're looking at two things that drive cancer in those who are obese. And that first, as I mentioned, is insulin resistance. And about two-thirds of obese individuals, male and female, have some element of insulin resistance. Then we look at the inflammation leading to the immune dysfunction, which basically leads to a hypertonic growth stimulation, which drives the cancer itself. So why would you say that postmenopausal obese women are at greater risk of developing breast cancer? What is...
Well, as you mentioned, you know, one of the drivers of breast cancer in general is estrogen, right? In premenopausal women, meaning, and we kind of use the arbitrary number 50. People under 50 are usually still seeing a period, and so they're premenopausal, over 50, postmenopausal. And so where does estrogen come from in a premenopausal woman? From the ovary, right? And remember, through the menstrual cycle, that's interrupted on an annual basis. Sorry, on a monthly basis. The thing about postmenopausal women, that estrogen environment continues if there's a lot of fat cells around. And the fat cells create, or estrogen is created in fat cells through an enzyme called aromatase. And so this is why obesity particularly is an important risk factor in postmenopausal women, in premenopausal women also, but mostly in postmenopausal women, because of the enzyme aromatase, which converts fat cells to estrogen. And so then that estrogen environment becomes increased. And again, that creates that hormonal imbalance, the insulin resistance. People also get type 2 diabetes. I think we got a call.
Okay. Yeah, good evening. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto and Dr. Wesley Francis.
Hello.
Hello, sir. Hello. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Good night, doctor. Yeah, you talk about all the other things like smoking, drinking, obesity, and the like, right? But I'm not hearing you talking about the things that people are eating the right things, right?
Well, we're going to get into that. That in itself could be a whole show. But yes, you're very much correct.
What I'm saying is, right, they're eating the right things, right? But the possessors, people who possess the food, genetically modify the food, don't let people know the impact of all of these genetically modified products, be it drink, food, beverage, cigarette, basically everything. So, it's like, it's paradoxical, for you to come on to say, well, it's this one or that one, when in essence, really, they've been given poison for years. And,
you're correct.
The government don't really come out and say, well, we're going to protect the people by, we don't want no genetically modified food to come in our country to keep our people healthy. You know, it's certain things you have to put in place because this will go on and on and on. And you know it's going to be getting rich to doctors. You know, the government needs to be responsible and be stern and not allow certain things in, as i.e. bleach and glow. What's the back of that? You know, women are allowed to use that bleaching cream to their liking. I mean, and the government ain't saying nothing. The doctors ain't saying nothing. All they are saying is cancer, this and that. The baby's having cancer so early. But what about all, mercury has been a carcinogen from time I remember. It used to be in thermometers. But now they dump it. What do they use it for? Bleaching cream. All the photographs of developers used in a dark room. Dark ladies put it on their skin. Can't go in the sun. Okay? There's a lot of stuff that are happening. And I mean, the government is putting the foot down. The doctors are benefiting. Okay? The people that are suffering, and they, I mean, through their ignorance, they just go and buy food and get obese. I wish I could get obese, been skinny all my life. You know? It's a consciousness. The government needs to put its foot down, stop spreading products and coming in this country to save the people and the doctors. I mean, y'all need to get a rest, man. Y'all are working too hard. You know?
Well, I everything you're saying is correct. We were about to get into that. I was going to list the whole, there are at least 12 modifiable risk factors related to all cancers. And the good news is that we look at even just at the United States, so we can extrapolate our own population to the United States. We had
like I'm telling you, right? I think it's the government, man. In Europe, they don't allow certain things to come in Europe.
Correct.
Or otherwise, okay?
Well, there are many food products that are made only for export. They won't.
Yeah, I mean, it's the government. Our government ain't focused. PLPF, I'm in either one, you know. I talk about the government in general. Ain't focused. Don't care about the people.
I understand what you're saying. I think it's important to have regulations, but I think we blame the government too many things. We have our own, in our own hands, we can reduce our alcohol intake. In our own hands, we can eat healthy. Stop the processed food.
Right? What about the bleaching, women bleaching their skin, trying to be white at any means? Every day.
I agree. They're doing untold harm. I mean, you can look at the chemicals that we put in our young...
So why are they doctors? Why are y'all telling...
Well, we're here trying to sound the alarm and try to increase... We're here volunteering at the end of a difficult day. But we're here on a soapbox, but we can't change people's habits. They need to make that decision for themselves.
I mean, people are allowed to have choice. We're in a free society. I mean, we're here to provide information to people. And I think we have been sounding the alarm for years, not just now, not just Greg and I talking about this now, but everybody knew tobacco effects. Everybody knows about the obesity effects. People know the alcohol effect. I'm sure many women know about the bleaching cream effect also. But people choose. And when we're in a free society, you can't always prevent people's choices. But what we're here to do is to inform, to educate, and to let people know that their choices will impact their life. And I agree with you. I mean, there has to be more advocacy. At least the population need to advocate more, because the government is just, we're the government. I mean, we're the members. And the government comes out of us. And so we are the people who have to determine whatever it is that we need for ourselves. I think we have another call.
I think they're bringing it in. But We look at modifiable risk factors. As many as 40% of cancers are related to modifiable risk factors. So that we have control of, we're going to have these high incidence of all cancers in our society or not. Or are we going to change and become a healthy nation instead of being the fourth highest incidence of per capita of obesity in the world? It's ridiculous. For example, cervical cancer. We essentially have a cure for cervical cancer since 2009. Why are women 23 years old, 41 years old, 58 years old, dying of stage 4 cancer, a horrible death, all the time in this country? All we have to do is advocate getting the HPV vaccine for young boys and young girls. In the next generation, there'll be no cervical cancer.
But it's free, right?
It's absolutely free. It's easily available.
And the government has provided that.
And the government has provided that. But we as a people do not take that on. We don't say that, you know what, this will prevent, let me get my 11-year-old son and my 11-year-old daughter or 12-year-old daughter to have the HPV vaccine So you know what? She doesn't have to worry about cervical cancer, or they don't have to worry about a head and neck cancer related to HPV with almost 100% certainty. HPV is the most common venereal disease, STI. So why aren't we doing something? The government provides it, so you can't blame the government for that. They're providing something for free that will can eradicate a relatively common cancer. And it's a horrible, decaying, necrotic odor of a woman with stage 4 cervical cancer is horrendous. The fact that many of them will die of kidney failure because their kidneys are completely obstructed by the cervical cancer, it's horrible. We have another call. Good evening. This urologist speaks.
Yes, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
I have a question. I want to know recommendation for the safest deodorant that you put on your arm.
Well, you have to look at anything. You have to be educated. You want to go in the food store and buy something, you have to look at the ingredients. You have to do your research. You have to study it. Obviously, there are natural ingredients that, even in deodorants, that are readily available. There, some companies actually promote safe deodorants. I'm not an expert in that, but obviously, just being a consumer, you want to be an educated, health-conscious consumer, that whether that's for deodorant, whether that's for the chicken that you buy, whether it's the beef that you buy, etc. So I think the best thing to do is just read the ingredients, and you need to do some education.
I just thought of asking that question in terms of your topic of presenting the different forms of cancer.
Yes,
so,
yes.
You mentioned about the availability of vaccination to prevent cervical cancer.
Yes.
Now, those vaccines, do they have an expiration date?
So you can get a boost, but usually it goes what you get two doses of the vaccine. If you're a little bit older, three, and you can even get it up to the age of 26. So even if you're not young, male or female, even up to the age of 26 is very effective, indicating you ever getting HPV.
No. My point basically is if the government is providing it, and it's not being utilized.
Yes. I understand what you. I understand your point. With everything, there's an expiration.
It'll be a waste.
How many of the COVID-19 vaccines did we have to throw away because of it expired? So yes, everything has an expiration date. But I think the government and any, even private institution, will order on demand. So if there's a greater demand, they're going to order more.
Yeah.
If they see that last year they only had to give a certain number of vaccines, that's what they're going to order.
I think what's important to know that it's available, it's available for boys, young boys and young women, and it prevents women from getting HPV, and HPV is the direct cause of cervical cancer. And so what we'd like our listenership and the audience to know is that it is available free of charge in the government clinics.
Take a pin, please. You said cervical cancer. So how young boys get into that now?
So there are other cancers related to HPV, but you just think about it from this perspective. As a husband, as a boyfriend, as a spouse, do you want to have HPV and then give it to the woman that you love?
So
we want to eradicate HPV in our society. So even HPV, you can have it. You can increase your risk of getting penile. And good Lord, as a urologist, you don't want to have penile cancer.
Right. Because, so so that we could understand, man, it's HPV is sexually transmitted. So if a man has HPV, he can then give it to the female. That's why we want to vaccinate both boys and women. That's why that's that way.
And then there are other HPV related cancers that you can get in men, including penile cancer, including various head and neck cancers,
and neck,
throat cancer, oral cancer, esophageal cancer.
And you can figure that one out.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the impact or the manifestation of penile cancer?
So if you're immunocompromised, HPV is also a risk factor. If you're immunocompromised, you also have a greater risk, increased risk in terms of poor hygiene over the years, or you've had a history of STIs as well. So if you want to reduce your risk of getting penile cancer, a circumcision will do that for you. Fortunately, penile cancer is very rare. I mean, there's some countries in Africa, for example, it's extremely prevalent. But unfortunately, the crying shame here is that it's such an embarrassing disease that many men will stay home for months on end until they develop a fungating mass on that basically the penis will basically self-amputate before they come in. Or the smell of the rotting flesh of your penis is so severe that the family's kicking them out the house. And then even then, they don't want to come to hospital. No,
that happens. That happens.
And then it's painful, too.
Well, of course.
Of course. It's painful on so many levels. Yeah, and your urethra, your pee pipe goes through your penis. If it becomes obstructed, many of these men will come because they can't urinate. Their bladder is about to burst.
But Pinted is the whole thing about denial, right? Because that happened with penile cancer. That happens with cervical cancer. That happens with breast cancer. Women are still showing up with these large breast masses that is breaking through the skin, foul smelling. And some of these women are married. But, you know, it's about, again, being informed, making the right choices. Awareness is important. And not deny these things. You can't go and hide under a rock. You know something is wrong. Go and get it checked out. And I think that's how we catch things early.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. So, so we're here to be positive. We all know, even the layperson knows, someone who's had cancer, we know the high incidence of cancer in this country across the board. There are risk factors that we have control over that can reduce the chance of getting as many as 40% of cancers across. I mean, that's considerable. We have control of our destiny. Don't smoke. Don't be obese. Have an active exercise regime in your life. Reduce your processed meat intake. I'll read down a list of modified risk factors from the most important in terms of cancer risk. Obviously, we've spoke about it. It's cigarette smoking, and we'll also talk about cigars. I like to vaping as well. Do not vape. Excess body weight, number two. Number three, alcohol consumption. Just from breast cancer, about 1 in 6 cases of breast cancer can be prevented by not drinking alcohol altogether or drinking very sparingly. In the United States, studies have shown that as many as 100,000 cancer cases per year are related to alcohol. As many as 20,000 cancer deaths are related to alcohol.
Or one-fifth.
And we look at fourth, UV radiation. Particularly related to tanning beds. We're primarily African ancestry population, but even black persons can get melanoma. They can get basal cell cancer. Bob Marley of skin cancer. We talk about physical inactivity as number five. Number six, HPV infection, which we just spoke about. We can eradicate if we provide vaccination for this generation so the next generation doesn't have to worry about cervical cancer or head and neck cancers or penile cancer related to HPV. Number seven, low fruit or vegetable diet or intake. There are many young persons in this country that don't have an apple, an orange, or a banana, even a mango in an entire year. We talk about processed meat as number eight. Number nine is low fiber diet. Make sure you have fiber in your diet. Talk about H. pylori infection. There's so many individuals in this society who talk about GERD, acid reflux. They feel like there's a burning in their chest every time they eat. There's a epigastric pain in their stomach. They feel this acid taste in their mouth. Sometimes they go to the point they're nauseous or they're vomiting. There's a strong correlation between this condition and peptic ulcer disease and H. pylori overgrowth, which is a natural bacterial flora within the gastrointestinal system. We can do a simple test, whether it's a fecal test or a breath test, analyzing test, to determine whether you have our H. pylori overgrowth. And instead of taking Nexium or Losec, which is just masking the symptoms, we could actually treat the H. pylori with a triple antibiotic for 10 days or 2 weeks, and you can be cured of your GERD. You can be cured of your epigastric pain or your burning in your chest. So please, I always advocate, always treat the root cause. If you have erectile dysfunction, let's figure out why you have erectile dysfunction. You just get taking a pill so that we can improve you to perform again. It's wonderful because it gives you back your confidence. It may save your relationship, et cetera, et cetera. But while we're doing that, in the background, we're determining why are you getting erectile dysfunction? Why are you getting gastrointestinal reflux? Why are you getting constipation? Taking Dulcolax or stool softeners or Fleet enemas, you're not looking at the root cause, which may be a colon cancer. So always treat the root cause. If you have something going wrong with you, you know your body best. Men in particular, please seek help. Even if it's an embarrassing condition, all of us physicians are not going to judge you. We're not going to ever speak about what you... We're happy. I'm happy to help someone who has premature ejaculation. I'm happy to diagnose somebody with prostate cancer and provide them a different future than the one they would have had if they didn't get diagnosed. So
I think one of the things we need to emphasize, Greg, is, you know, health maintenance. You know, we have vehicles, we maintain our cars and all of that. But just maintaining your body. You have one body, and that is the one body you have for the rest of your life. And health maintenance is important. Being literate about your health. Avoiding factors that are going to lead to poor health. Nutrition is one of them. Physical activity. Just avoiding, again, alcohol, tobacco. You know, obesity is an interesting thing. I mean, because it's difficult for people to lose weight sometimes. You know, January is probably the highest rate of gym membership, and it falls off. And so, you know, it's something that you have to always maintain. But one of the things that I want to emphasize is everybody should have a family physician. And it's about having that relationship with your physician. And it's not all about going somewhere and getting a bunch of tests done. It's about having that relationship with your primary care physician who you see on an annual basis or even more frequently if necessary. And then you, through that relationship, you develop a health maintenance schedule for you. And it should be individualized. It's not just to go somewhere and get just a battery of tests. Health maintenance is important. And having that relationship with your physician, because that is really where medicine started, is about that relationship. And there's a ton of access to primary care doctors in this country. We have a lot of primary care doctors. And I think, you know, the access has improved. NHI has certainly improved that. That's a government initiative. And also those of you who have private insurance who can go and see a private doctor elsewhere. But it's important that you develop that relationship and have a health maintenance schedule for yourself.
I mean, we're looking at the listenership right now. One in four are going to unfortunately develop cancer in their lifetime. As many as one in six are going to actually die of some form of cancer. We talk about prostate cancer. If you live into your 80s, essentially you're going to get prostate cancer, but is it going to be a cause of your death? Unlikely. You're more likely to die with it than from it.
Yeah.
So prostate cancer is a very preventable disease in terms of looking at the modifiable risk. Sexually transmitted disease can increase your risk of getting a prostate cancer. And alcohol intake can increase your risk of getting a more aggressive form of prostate cancer.
The key thing is we shouldn't be getting or identifying prostate cancer at such a late stage. And I think that's one of the things we're trying
to colon cancer, or
breast cancer.
When we talk about pancreatic cancer around the world, it's difficult because it doesn't have symptoms until it's too late.
It's hard to find pancreas cancer, really. You know, and again, in our community, the BRCA gene increases your risk of pancreas cancer. There's no screening tool for it, but listen. One of the things that I see a lot of people come to see me about is they having gas, there's gas, that, and they taking all kind of gas medication and never seek a physician to try to figure out what is the problem. And as you've always said, Greg, root cause. We need to identify what is the cause of the symptoms. Your body's a well-oiled machine that's and is made in such a way you know, it repairs itself. And if things are going wrong, you would know. So you have to seek early, you know, early detection is what we need to be doing.
I'd like to thank you, Dr. Wesley Francis, surgical
Absolutely
oncologist,
being
for
here.
Being present. I think we had a wonderful talk. We're here to try to enlighten the nation, live. We want longevity. And the good news, there are preventable risk factors that can significantly reduce your chance of getting all cancers.
There is hope.
So drink sparingly. Make sure you have a normal body weight. And please do not smoke cigarettes, cigars, or vaping.
Good night, Bahamas.
Good night, Bahamas.
Take full control of your bladder. Don't let it control.